From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Dry January, or giving up alcohol for the month, is a huge trend that many people undertake at the start of every year. In fact, according to health experts, Sober Curious is likely to be one of the top health and wellness trends of 2024. So joining us today to talk more about this is Annie Grace. She's the best-selling author of This Naked Mind, The Alcohol Experiment. Annie, it's really nice to have you on the program.
That's so great to be here. Thank you for having me, Gemma.
So Annie, give us a little bit of background about you and why you kind of started down this path of being sober curious.
Yeah, I actually didn't drink a lot in college. I moved to New York City and I was basically told by a boss that showing up to happy hour was kind of like the golf course. That's where the deals were done. And I should really make an effort to do that. And I did, and I had a plan. I would go out and I would have a glass of wine and then a pint of water and make sure I never got too tipsy. But something really interesting happened, which I would get home after a few months of doing this. And instead of putting on my running shoes to go relieve my stress from the day, I'd think, oh, I could just go buy a bottle of wine and that would work as well. And slowly over a decade, alcohol just kind of crept in. It started replacing all of my coping habits. And I found myself 10 years later, very successful in my career, but also drinking two bottles of wine pretty much every single night.
Wow. Okay. And so you must have then had a moment where you were like, maybe something needs to change.
Yeah, I had a whole series of different moments. I mean, I remember one moment where I asked my four-year-old son to come sit on my lap and he said, "No, Mom, you smell bad and your teeth are purple." And it was just so heartbreaking. Yeah, I started to get really curious about, all right, maybe alcohol isn't kind of the relaxant and social lubricant and all these things, you know, maybe it's doing more harm than good. And that really started me on a journey of thinking, right, well, this will be easy. I'll just drink less. And the thing is that drinking less was physically easy. I could just not drink. I could take a break. But mentally, I had come to really believe that alcohol was the key to relaxation, to networking, to having a good time. And so when I would take that break, I would feel very deprived, like I was missing out kind of outside of my own life.
So why do you think then that the sober curious trend is top of mind for so many people? And I mean, we can go back to the dry January thing, but I think that this idea of sober curiosity is just something that has really been popping up within our culture in the last couple of years.
I think, you know, with so much of internal depression, anxiety, distress at an all-time high, we're really looking at ways to make that better. And a lot of us have been self-medicating with alcohol. That's just what it's what we've been trained to do by media, by television shows. You know, the detective goes out for drinks afterwards, by our own careers, by our friends. I remember a mommy group who would be like, "Oh, you're feeling bad. Let me bring over wine and we'll pop the bottle." And we're starting to realize that we still feel bad. And curiosity comes in, well, is this working? If it was working, shouldn't I be feeling better, not worse over time? And we're just starting to look at, well, why? And I think also it's become okay for just the average person to decide to drink a bit less or nothing at all. You don't have to be an alcoholic. You don't have to have a problem in order to change. And so their experience of drinking less is kind of traveling throughout the zeitgeist. People are saying, yeah, I've been drinking less. I really feel good. I have more energy. I lost a few pounds. I feel more alert during the day. And so it's just awakening this cultural curiosity. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about dry January, because this is definitely a big movement. I mean, I do it every year. And the reason why I do it is because I feel like the holidays, it's not just the drinking, it's the eating, it's the everything, right? And it's just kind of like a good reset. But with that said, I think for a lot of people, they're just counting down the days until February 1st. Whereas, I mean, for me, I just kind of take it as a time to really kind of reset for the entire year. But what kind of mindset do you think a lot of people have going into dry January?
Yeah, I think you can really approach it in two different ways. And I actually like to call it like an alcohol experiment, where you're just sort of experimenting on not having alcohol in your life for that 30 days. Because the reality of what happens is that if you go into it with an experiment mentality, then you don't have this failure. And you don't have this sense of deprivation. Whereas if you go into it like, I'm going to be dry, this is January, I'm not drinking, it really is so much like going on a diet for alcohol if you don't have the right mindset. You're going into it and you're feeling like, you know, and what happens with the brain, if I was to tell you, you can no longer have ice cream and French fries, you probably...
I'd say a big no on that.
You'd want... As soon as we're just like toddlers in so many ways, you say, you can't have that cookie, we want the cookie. And so if we say, oh, we can't have alcohol, that really engenders this idea of counting down the days and feeling deprived for the entire month.
So, you know, I know not only did you write the book, Naked Mind, the Alcohol Experiment, you created an entire community around living alcohol-free. Even you have another book about nicotine for folks who maybe have been smoking. But talking about drinking, have you found that there are maybe common triggers that a lot of people have when it comes to drinking? And I don't know if this is a trigger or not, but I will say I was very similar to you. I was never a big drinker. And then I had kids. And honestly, I joke that I'm like, I think I drank more when my kids were little than I ever drank even in college. And I mean... And I think some of it was it's that stress, right? But the moment that I realized that it was like, oh, I don't need to have a glass of wine every night to wind down, but I do like that just relaxing feeling. And I love holding a really nice glass, like that has ice in it. That like, right? I mean, so does that make sense? Of like, is that a trigger or what are some of these things? And then how do we manage that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a few things to unpack there. I mean, one is just like honoring that ritual, right? And I think that's another thing that has us in this countdown phase. If we don't kind of replace that ritual with something else when we're trying to have a month dry, which is honor the ritual, find a really great mocktail or an alcohol-free wine, or even Guinness makes a 0% like Guinness. And so honoring the ritual and how nice it is to feel that moment of just self-care and feel that moment of I'm doing something for me at the end of the day. And then in terms of the triggers, absolutely. My drinking skyrocketed when my kids were little. And I think that's so true for so many people. And there's a lot of reasons. A lot of it is just a bit cultural at this point. You know, mommy is a really true thing. You know, they even have brands of alcohol like mommy's sippy cup. And different ideas of just saying like, hey, moms deserve something too. And so I think that when we're in those moments of nothing can prepare you for how it is to be on 24/7 as a parent. And when you have those few hours to yourself at night after they're in bed, it's so understandable that we've just been said, yeah, turn to this thing. And it just makes all the sense in the world.
So why do you think so many people drink when they're feeling stressed or anxious? Does it go back to maybe, I would imagine that maybe it goes back to those first, you know, couple of sips, right? Where it really is very relaxing, right? Yeah. But then it's that, okay, if you keep going, that feeling goes away.
You've hit it on the head. So just a very fast science lesson. Alcohol is actually both a stimulant and a depressant. And it's such a fascinating substance in that sense. So the stimulant nature of alcohol is when your blood alcohol content is rising, and that happens, and you can time it. I highly recommend people who are curious to time it. It's about 20 minutes after that first drink. And so that blood alcohol rising gives you those stimulant effects, that kind of euphoria, your thoughts slow down a bit, you feel more at ease, you feel a bit more energy. And that's the feeling that really gets us hooked. The thing is that crests, your body says, alert, alert, because alcohol is not, it's toxic to the body. It's the same chemical compound that's found in your gas tank. And so your body says alert and starts to purge the alcohol from your system. Your blood alcohol content starts falling, And the feeling of your blood alcohol content falling is the depressant effect of alcohol. And that feels like uneasiness, anxiety, tiredness. You feel a little bit less safe, less secure. You're wondering what exactly is wrong. And so what do we do about 20 minutes after the first drink is we tend to pick up another and kind of keep that feeling going. But the blood alcohol falls for 2 to 3 hours for one drink, whereas it rises for 20 minutes. So if you look at it, it is a really deceptive but very unfair trade of happiness.
So what's been interesting to me as well is all of the information coming out really about the Gen Z generation and the fact that when we look at generations like millennials, Gen X, boomers, they drink so much less. And have you seen this in the work that you do? And maybe this sober curious movement in younger people, because it seems to me that they are finding this mind body connection much earlier than I think a lot of my generation did.
Absolutely. And it's, I've even heard it said by some of that generation is that alcohol was their parents' drug. And if you combine that with the fact that pretty much their entire lives are recorded on social media, I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm certainly thankful that there's certainly there was no social media, that they're really mindful. You know, they don't want to be the person stumbling around and have other people post that. And so they really want to be more in control of themselves because they are living this almost public life from a public recorded life. And, you know, that combined with what you said about the mind-body connection and them just discovering earlier, it's amazing what's happening.
You know, what's interesting to me as well is that this, here in Boise, I've noticed that, and I could be wrong, but I think this is the first year where they're calling it the Temperance Trail, and cocktail bars around the city. You can go get this little passport and they'll stamp it. And what it does is it's all non-alcoholic cocktails that they are making in like these nice cocktail lounges around town. And they're really promoting this, that sober curious, but I think still, as you mentioned in the beginning of our conversation, where sometimes when you give up alcohol, it's like you give up your entire social life, right? So what about that idea as well, where I think when we see not just, bars and lounges, but even like big alcohol companies, right, that are realizing that people still want kind of all of these things that go along with alcohol, but they just don't want the alcohol all of the time.
Absolutely. And I think it's such a beautiful kind of movement that's happening in general, because we do want the ritual. We do want the self-care. We do want the community and the social aspects of this. And we're realizing, but we don't want the hangover. We don't want the headache. We don't want the feeling of 20 minutes after a drink of feeling uneasy and all of these things. We don't want the empty calories. And so how can we have both? And I think it's really also magnified in the fact that we've moved away. And I think we're continuing to move away from this kind of black and white way that we used to see drinking. We used to see drinking as if you overdrink, you are an alcoholic and you have to quit. If you don't overdrink, then there's no reason you shouldn't be pouring one more. And we're now allowing that, hey, I could live in the middle here. I could be a mindful drinker. I could be sober curious. I could maybe one day do the Temperance Trail and then the next day have a few cocktails at a wedding. And both things can be allowed, because again, when we put that sense of deprivation, you can never drink again, it actually prevents people from even being curious about their relationship with alcohol, wondering if, because the problem is we've been asking for so long, am I an alcoholic? Do I have a problem? How much drinking is too much? And often that's even people's motivation for Dry January. And if we just ask this better question of, would I be happier drinking a bit less? Would I feel better if I just had a few fewer cocktails, every week? What would that look like? Let me experiment with that. Let me look at that in my own life without blame, without shame, without labels. It really opens up a whole area of exploration.
So can we talk a little bit about how to drink less then without quitting? Because I'm in that category where I definitely really am very mindful of how I drink. And yes, I do Dry January. But one of the things I was just reading recently as well was, you know, how do you continue dry January without, you know, but still maybe incorporating drinking into your lifestyle again? And one of the recommendations was take 1 week, 7 straight days, every single month, and do not drink alcohol, because it also allows for your body to really have a reset. Now, what was funny about that, I'm telling my husband about it, he goes, well, then I just make up for it by drinking all the other times. I'm like, yeah, well, I wouldn't, but you know, how do we mindfully drink so that we can drink less, because not everyone wants to, you know, go cold turkey and quit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those sorts of suggestions are great. My suggestion tends to focus on education and knowledge. You know, if we're really honest with ourselves, we know a lot more about something like the side effects of Advil than we know about alcohol. And not knowledge in a scary way, not knowledge in a way that's saying like, oh, you know, this is bad for me, because I think that sort of stress and fear actually causes us to drink more, not less. But knowledge about ourselves, you know, why do I want to pour a drink? Is it authentic to me? Is it just peer pressure? How am I going to feel tomorrow? And exploring why I look to this and what I think it's going to do for me. And then testing that out. Does it really do the thing? That was so surprising to me. I remember this one moment in my own journey where I was starting to become really mindful and really curious about alcohol. And I did my evening ritual, which was walk out of my home office to the cabinet, open the cabinet to pour myself a glass of wine. And I realized I was feeling better as I opened the cabinet before I even took the first sip. And I was like, whoa, that's interesting. It was just the ritual of it, the anticipation of the knowing that the transition from the end of the workday to the beginning of the evening, I felt better before I even drank the first sip of alcohol, and sort of paying attention to those sorts of things and being like, is it the alcohol or is it just that I'm creating time and space for myself? And I also think just starting to decouple all of the things that we do for fun. You know, we think that drinking makes sporting events fun, but nobody ever talks about, oh, I loved the beers I had. They talk about all the, you know, the company. And so just saying like, these things are, they're really fun anyway, if we allow them to be. And just noticing that, noticing the things that are enjoyable in your life, and alcohol can become much more relevant and small when you've allowed those kind of false associations to fall by the wayside.
So before I let you go, can you give our listeners maybe one quick, you know, piece of advice that folks could take away with them if they're, you know, thinking, you know, if they are sober curious, if maybe they want to become just more mindful about all of this?
Well, I'll give two. The first thing I would say is just absolutely, if you are questioning your drinking and you have any shred of shame or blame or guilt or feeling like, oh, I really should be able to handle it better, and it's really gotten away from me, and I really do feel badly about it, just know that it's honestly not your fault. Your brain is reacting exactly how it should react to a chemical substance that is addictive. And so it's not your fault. And understand that when you have that level of self-compassion, you know, the second thing I would say is you've been doing the best you can with the tools you have. And alcohol has been given to us as a tool in our society for pretty much forever. And from that perspective, from that place of self-compassion, you can awaken a level of curiosity of, okay, well, why do I feel like I might need it more than I want it? Why do I feel like I, you know, give in more than I perhaps want to? Why do I feel like I overdid it that other night? And that level of curiosity can open up a whole world once we put down the judgment and the shame.
Well, I just so appreciate the conversation. So thank you so much for taking time to chat with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been an honor.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed, because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.